You have those answers within yourself. Ask people a lot and know that it's okay. It's actually okay. It's okay to not train. It's okay to actually, start training and then pull out. I'm a perfect example of that. I'm, pretty happy professionally. It's okay to try and put your best in it and not get there, get knocked back. It doesn't actually, one of the things I learned, which was the second biggest kind of knockback I had, perhaps, which is probably the most intense, was the first exam failure, which is I failed my written for emergency. And, I was 41 at the time, so I never failed an exam. And, I that was such a so it was such a big blow, trying hard to get it. And I think I remember this phrase from a friend who was also trying to sit his anesthetic exams, and he'd failed. And he said, "There's a Zig Ziglar quote that failure is an event, not a person."
Are you a health professional wanting to explore all the options life has to offer? Then you've come to the right place. The Balanced Medics Handover podcast is all about living outside the box of what we've been told. I'm Isabella, your host, a junior doctor from Australia and trained coach. I'll be interviewing health professionals from all walks of life, artists, authors, non-clinical specialists, and more. These stories show that our choices are endless. Let's take the journey together. This is The Handover. Hello and welcome back to the Balanced Medics Handover podcast. Today we have Dr. Vishan Rajapakse on to share his scenic journey through medicine. Vishan is a staff specialist in emergency medicine, educator, medical writer at Life in the Fast Lane, and advocate for well-being. I'm really excited to have Vishan on to show that it's okay to do specialty training at the pace that is right for you and your life. There's no rush to a finish line, even if we may feel that pressure when we're on the medical treadmill to consultancy. So without further ado, let's hand over to Vishan. Hi, Vishan. How are you?
Not too bad. Hi, Isabella. It's a great pleasure to be here and an honor to be in your podcast, to be honest. I've been listening to it probably in the last 8 months or so. I just discovered it and I thought, wow, what is this all about? Would have loved to have seen something like this when I was training. But pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much. And I'm so glad that you're on to share your journey. And I think it's really great that we can make things that we would have wanted when we were a junior. So it's great to be here to chat about that today. So I like to start every episode in this way. Can you share your journey and how you got to where you are now?
Depends on how much time you got. But, look, essentially, I am probably an interesting character. My journey has been quite diverse. I was born into a medical family. I'm quite a culturally diverse person. I'm a Sri Lankan born New Zealander who has now been in Australia for about 10 plus years, and I'm naturalizing here to have a third citizenship. But essentially, I was quite young when I got into medicine. I did it as an undergraduate from Otago University in New Zealand, Wellington Clinical School. And I just pretty much took the scenic route to training right from the beginning. Now, this is our 25th year in, so I'm actually graduated in 97. But at that time, things were quite different in terms of the pressures of training, and it was quite normal to have a bit of time to find your feet. In fact, I'm an emergency specialist, but I actually did surgical training at the beginning. Well, to be fair, I actually did life at the beginning. I went traveling for about 3 years, and then I had always had a vision of either doing orthopedic surgery or emergency. And pretty much, had those two interests at medical school, but they weren't huge, and I was open to doing anything, really. My biggest passion was traveling and living life. I was 22 when I graduated, and I was very conscious that there was a lot of life, and I probably peaked academically at high school. That's because I hadn't discovered the distractions and the sort of the fruits of life outside the medical pathway or the academic pathway, to be honest. So for me, it was quite interesting because at my 15-year class reunion, I was the youngest in my medical class at the time of graduation, but at the 15-year class reunion, I was one of a handful of people who hadn't completed specialist training. And it was kind of interesting, you know, looking back at those 15 years. But I tell you what, I'd had a pretty interesting journey. In fact, I spoke at the talks, you know, along with a few other interesting characters. So I guess, you know, it's interesting you asked me to share some of my experiences about maybe taking the scenic route or going in your own pace or, you know, I think I want to say up front, it has not been easy to do things that made sense to me at all. And, you know, but I've always, you know, had a strong sense of following my gut because that's all I've got really at the end of the day. And I was fortunate because I, you know, in a sense, had a lot of doctors who were part of my family. So there was like no bullshit, you know, like literally I knew what was going on in medicine. I knew how much it encompasses your whole life. But I also knew the good things about it. So it's probably, you know, I think you had asked why did I do medicine? And, you know, it's kind of interesting. I was just like drawn into it, like probably like a slipstream, like a rip current. I'm a big surfer. I love surfing, you know, and it's kind of like that. You go out for a paddle and you're sucked into the rip for me. Mainly because, you know, it was, you know, of a Sri Lankan, Indian subcontinent background, you know, medicine is looked very high up, certainly valued in my family, but there wasn't direct pressure. My dad's a doctor. My older brother did medicine and many, many uncles and cousins. So a big medical family. But I was always interested in science and also, you know, the arts, to be honest. My mother's a artist. And a science teacher. So, you know, I loved learning new things. So medicine seemed like also quite a social thing. When I saw my older brother study at Otago University, one of the most social universities in New Zealand. And it seemed like a lot of fun, it looked interesting, but I certainly wasn't one of those people who had this dream of altruism and you know, doing big things in medicine. Ironically, years later, when I had sort of hit the wall and really was, you know, seriously looking at leaving medicine and, you know, did this journey, that's when I really rediscovered the why, which I think is very important to know why. So you may ask the question, why? And I didn't really know why, but I had to know why to re-enter into a training pathway because I wasn't going to do that to myself because it's so arduous. It's so arduous that people just don't talk about it. So, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And it's a really great overview. I know it's tricky to condense all of your life story into one answer for a question. I found it funny when you said you peaked academically in high school, because sometimes I reflect on that myself. Like, I think I peaked very young because you have all these other interests, you know, in life and traveling and art and creative expression. It's like you have your attention in so many places. And also very interesting about re-entering medicine was when you really reflected on your why.
Yes, definitely.
So what, if we just went back a bit, what led you to switch from surgery to ED? What was behind that decision?
Well, that's a good question. So essentially ED, so what I believe is you choose a career based on what the, in within medicine, what the actual job entails, but also who are the people who are doing it and do they inspire you? And so often you get inspired into a line of profession. And I remember as a third year medical student out of 6 years in our training, I was just before the clinical and I did a studentship with an orthopedic surgeon who was very charismatic. His name was Professor Jeffrey Horn, amazing guy. And he was just, you know, all the things that I would aspire to be in terms of an educator. He was, you know, he and I did a research project on mountain bike fractures. It was interesting. It was fun. He let me do everything. I published it as first order author. And, you know, I wasn't particularly interested in research, but that's probably what sparked it. I later went on and did research in Sri Lanka and all this sort of stuff. But that sparked it. And so I liked the practical aspect of orthopedics. I also liked the I like the cut and dry nature of it, because I found, my dad's a physician, but I found medicine, even at medical school, quite ephemeral for me. It just seemed to be hard to get your head around, you know, in terms of, you know, there were just too many variables, whereas orthopedics seemed pretty straightforward in that, and it was about their challenge of management, you know, and more than the diagnosis. But at the same time, I've got a creative person, and I really liked the TV series ER. It was just coming out in the late 90s, and it just seemed so dynamic. And I actually did my elective
in Clooney.
George Clooney, totally, and another dude. I can't remember his name now, but you know, like the whole series was great, and a lot of us were watching it at that time. And I did my elective in New York. I went to Queens, and I actually did ER in New York. And it was, yeah. And then I went to Sri Lanka, where I'm from originally, for the second half of my elective. And I did the Greek islands in between, because we didn't tell the elective people that. But, you know, but it was so fascinating, that journey, because one thing, I knew international work was so important to me. Like, I love travel. You know, I'm a what they call a third culture kid or whatever. I grew up in three countries, you know, from the UK, Saudi Arabia, and New Zealand. And I actually love the fact that medicine isn't an international thing. We're all human beings. And you know, it's that the art is quite, there's some common ground wherever you are. And I loved, you know, in New York, I saw emergency medicine and I thought that seemed amazing. I was exposed to emergency surgery in Sri Lanka and a bit of obstetrics. And so I kept my options open, but then I really didn't want to decide. I came back. I did actually, because anyone who was doing orthopedics, they would tag them with psychiatry rotation. So I actually ended up doing orthopedics and psychiatry. Yeah, they always used to do that back in our day. So that was interesting, because I actually was interested in psychiatry too. I was one of these people who was interested in everything. And that's probably why I'm now in emergency medicine, which is the most suited thing for me, because I loved all the rotations I did. I found them fascinating in their own little way. Some I like more better than others, but definitely I found everything that I was doing at the time. And to be fair, when I got into medicine, I got, like I said, I peaked in high school. I got direct entry, and that allowed me the flexibility to study whatever I wanted to rather than have to get high grades. That's the way it was at the time. So I chose, when I got to choose, apart from the standard sciences, I chose psychology, world religions, and anthropology. And those were my true passions. And the weird thing is, what I'm doing right now in emergency is really allowing me to actually practice those interests, because my non-clinical portfolio is well-being, culture, and safety, and I'm very passionate about what we're doing right now, is trying to actually help the next generation and make it a place where there's more humanity in healthcare, not just for the patients and everyone that we're serving, but also for us, for healing the healers, essentially. So by having, you know, it's funny, 25 years later, I find that I am actually back to what my passions were always about. So I found a way to, you know, bring in what my true interests and values within sort of the professional spectra are. So, yeah, when I was, the question about surgery, what I found was that I went off to the UK, which is like one third of our class, or at least a quarter of our class, got medical registration and in New Zealand. And back then we could actually get reciprocal registration with the GMC, General Medical Council of UK. We didn't have to sit any exams. It was completely reciprocal, which is a great gig, because we turned up there, we locumed, we could live and work in the NHS, which is a great medical experience in itself, and you make a lot of money and you can go travel around Europe. So most people did that for a year. And I even remember some of my orthopedic senior kind of mentors, they did that and they'd come back and they hunkered down and they had their fun. And that was the model always. You just have, you can go away and you do stuff, you keep it a bit under the radar, and then you hunker down and then you just smash on and you're on a treadmill again. Whereas for me, I just thought the treadmill made no sense, because really looking forward, what really concerned me, well, what inspired me was what was at the end. So the people like I said, there were some orthopedic people who people in orthopedics were quite inspiring to me. I didn't know that many emergency doctors, but I did in America, the elective. And I just thought, look, I'll choose surgery. My brother was doing surgical training as well. He did plastic surgery. I did orthopedics. And I thought to sit for an exam. But slowly I realized that it was so arduous, and also the culture. So for me, the culture is key. You've got to know if the culture of the training and the end station is in alignment with your culture and your value systems. And for me, I just couldn't be the person that I am in orthopedics. And, you know, essentially I was knocked back in, you know, at a sort of quite a sort of in-depth level in it. I was probably applied for the second time. And at that point, I realized that I was never going to get on. Actually, that's what actually woke me up for the whole thing. I think there was a personality clash between me and the head of training in a different side. And it was clear that I didn't fit the mold at the time. And I kind of, that irked me because, you know, like, in, but isn't the same in all specialities. It's very difficult to properly assess people. It really comes down to what I tell people now is you got to have a sponsor and you have to have a mentor. Okay. The sponsor is the most important thing. I actually heard this at an emergency conference just in Amsterdam. We had an international conference just in May this year. And there was the director of the emergency department in South Africa. She was talking about you must have a sponsor because that is about someone who likes your character values, and they're going to just bat for you to progress because there's so many obstacles in training. So if you have that, and I actually did have that in Wellington, that mentor who I did the research for before I left. But then I went AWOL and, you know, I ended up doing, you know, a lot of interesting stuff, ICU and general surgery. And then I sort of came back to it, and it was really tricky because I didn't really have the backing that you needed. And so I went to the interview process and I did some, you know, some feedback afterwards to find out what actually happened. And it was so telling because I didn't get much good feedback. But one of the people told me I had a black mark against my name. And essentially, I was not going to get on unless I went and worked up with someone else for a year or whatever. And at that stage, I was just like, no, I am out of this. And actually, I had actually a lot of deterioration in my own life. And I realized my own value systems were changing. I did 24-hour call, one in three roster. And I didn't realize at the time, like many people in medicine, you just don't realize how hard you're working and how against your own value systems you're doing something because your eyes on the goal. Except the goal is 10 years away. So a lot of people have committed too much. So I think one of the most courageous things I did was to actually decide, no, I'm not going to do this. And I didn't know what I was going to do for a while. So this was probably a tricky place for a lot of people. And I remember it like yesterday, you know, and a lot of time has passed, right? That was 2005. It was an interesting year. So essentially, I just, you know, I was still doing surgery. Relieving rotation. So, you know, it's so fascinating because a lot of the different specialties were very interested in trying to recruit me, you know, and I thought it was interesting because I was not wanting it so bad. I was just more like just doing my thing. And there's a certain power in that when you don't want it. But then I knew as the minute I wanted it, it's going to go back to the same system. So I just figured, you know what? I've just got to spend some time now reassessing, what do I actually want to do with my life? Not what I want to do in medicine, what do I want to do with my life? And so a few people who are some really inspiring people I met along the way, there was a guy, I remember his name, Sherwood Pakamani. He was a UK orthopedic surgeon who was a dentist. I think he was going to do Max Fax. He came over and he learnt his pilot license whilst doing a rotation. I remember he'd get me to hold the page and he'd always go off flying. And he was just, you know, someone who, and he remembered this phrase he told me. He said, you know, in medicine, you've got to reclaim your life. And that was so interesting. I find that I'm doing that all the time. Even now, I am reclaiming my life after the fellowship. I got my emergency fellowship 4 years ago. And a lot of my current goals are about giving back to my partner. I've got two little kids. And it's all about family for me, within reason, because, you know, it's my life, my family is my highest values. And yet I'm still, you know, very dedicated to work and passionate, but I know that that is the order. So what I teach people, actually, when I talk about well-being and try and model, is to prioritize self-care. That is something that was not told to me. Because if you don't prioritize your own self-care, you just don't have the energy to give your best, which means you actually don't do your best. So that's what happened. I actually moved to emergency because I thought about ICU, but I like dealing with people who are awake a lot, you know, and I like the non-critical as well. I like the critical care side of things. But what I loved about emergency is I went into the director of the emergency department, said, "Hey, this is me. I've done a bit of time, you know, in the UK. I love international work. I haven't done any, but I want to do some maybe." And she said, "Oh, we'll have you. We like, well, this is emergency. We take all sorts of people." And, you know, I've worked on a cruise ship for 6 months, and I thought, wow, these are people speaking my language. I don't have to, like when I was doing surgery, I had to hide all the time out I took, my CV. So I just felt like this is a place that I could be myself, and it's so diverse in our community that I could, you know, do international work, I could play music, I like to play guitar, I could be myself. And I moved into emergency, and this is the weird thing, I moved into emergency, right? And three weeks later, the tsunami, the Boxing Day tsunami hit in 2004. So I just started a new career, and you know, like thousands of people in Sri Lanka were killed in that. And I just wanted to jump on a plane, and you know, we were collecting for our houses and stuff. And I just wanted to go there and do some community work. Because one of the things I thought when I didn't get on the orthopedic program was to do MSF. But I didn't like the fact that I couldn't choose where I'd go. And I understood that they have to send people where they wanted, but I wanted to go back to Sri Lanka. I'd never lived there. I'd been there many times. But essentially, I wanted to. And this is an interesting thing, right? You know, I have this saying that you've got to follow your heart. And, you know, always follow your heart, because life is too short to be following other people's dreams, okay? But sometimes you've got to put in your system too and think, well, how will I get there? And if I had jumped on a plane and gone to Sri Lanka, I wouldn't have been able to sit my one of the primary exams. And all I needed to do was get one exam, and they would have counted all my surgical primaries. And then I would be an advanced trainee, which gave me much more scope. And that's exactly what I did, because I called my cousin who was on the ground, and she said, "You know what? Come next year, when there's so many doctors here, and no one knows what they're doing, and I don't think they're doing that much, you know, work. You know, why don't you come next year? No one's going to be there, and that's when you probably find that you can do a lot more." And that's exactly what I did. So I basically got my exam. Lucky I got that exam. I didn't fail that, and I got straight into advanced training. So I was in my, you know, second 6 months of emergency, and I was an advanced trainee the beginning of training 2005. And then when it came to jobs, I said, "No, I'm not applying for a job next year. I want to go." And this emergency allows you 2 years out, actually. So I thought I'll take 1 year out, and I'll go for 6 months to a year, and I'll do some community work with an NGO. But what happened, and this is the amazing thing, is, you know, it's like you take the first step and all these opportunities will open up for you. And, you know, and it was really interesting, because, like, I told my dad I'm going to Sri Lanka, and I thought he'd be super happy, because he's always been, you know, proud of his heritage and our heritage. And the first thing he said to me was, why are you going? Like, you know, why don't you finish? And of course, my director of training was like, why are you going? Like, just finish, become a consultant. And I'm like, no, I'm 31. I'm single. Now is the time. And, you know, I didn't mention, but like part of that whole orthopedic scenario was I had a significant breakup of a relationship as well. And that was all tied into this sort of like awakening. What do I want in my life? And for me, I knew, which I would consolidate over my journey in Sri Lanka. So Sri Lanka was really a personal journey, right? I mean, you know, I went there, I ended up doing research, I got a PhD out of it in the end. That's the shortened version, but that has nothing to do with the real story behind it, right? So the real story was that I just wanted to go there, and I wanted to stop putting on hold the true passions of what I wanted to do in my life. I wanted to travel. And I thought, you know what? I can't wait a second longer. I've already waited like so much longer than I wanted to, right? And I had this amazing opportunity with Emergency where I could still be in the system. And they were going to be okay with it. They didn't have any, you know, thing that I had to do. So I did tell that to the director of training. He did try to convince me that it'd be way better if I was a consultant, and then I could go and I could do XYZ. But, you know, it's kind of like the story of, and he's a lovely guy, like, and everything he said was actually correct. It was true, but it wasn't right for me. You see what I mean? And he knew that. He said, okay, well, look, if you're going to go, why don't you just hook up with these guys? There's a couple of people who are doing research down there, and they'll be able to show you some interesting things. Maybe just give them a shout. And I was really grateful for that connection, because I ended up, you know, doing the NGO stuff, but I found that this international research collaboration, it really was quite an interesting thing that they were trying to, you know, save lives of people who are drinking poison and by developing antidotes. They're clinical toxicologists, and, you know, that just added a huge dimension to what I was doing there, which allowed me to, I was forced into doing research in a sense, because one of the conditions was to sign up for an MPhil, which I asked them, what's an MPhil? They said, it's a Master of Philosophy. And I said, oh, great, I love philosophy, but it was actually a research master's. So that's how it started. Yeah.
Wow. So much there. It's such a rich story. And it is true what you were saying as well, that it's brave to do that, brave to leave things and brave to not go on what is the accepted path. And huge as well to be in a place that really accepts and sees you for who you are. You don't need to hide parts of yourself. You don't need to pretend to be anyone that you're not. And there's such power in just being who you are.
Very much so. You know what gave me that power the most was was failing. It's like I had a crash course, because literally, you know, and this is one of the big things that I like to talk about with our sort of training cohort, even my consultant colleagues. There's such a dearth of ground of training failure in medicine, because we're not trained to fail. And that was my first point of failure, was actually not making it on the orthopedic program. And it was so interesting, because my relationship with failure, I could see, was very different to a lot of other people, and to my benefit, because I guess it comes down to, you know, vulnerability. Because I remember the year after I didn't get on, I partied with all the colleagues who got on the program, and, you know, or some were getting on. I just wanted to hang out with them, because there were people I'd spent really good part of my life, and they felt, you know, some of them were really sorry for me, because they just thought, how can you do this? Aren't you devastated? And I'm like, not really, because I just want to hang out, because, you know, you guys are great people. And, you know, but I could see that there's this thing called medical shame. It's so big, right? And so for me, I just overcame that element, because I just thought, well, this is who I am. So I actually, in Emergency, I think I help a lot of people who are doing surgery, because they got no one to talk to about this often, you know, because it's like a do or die. You always wonder, when I was doing surgery, you always wonder what happened to those people who never made it, because it's a very pyramidal system. And, you know, it's interesting when you listen to the podcast, you know, we are not amazing people because of what we do. It's because of who we are. And that's something that is often lost. You can never take the greatest goodness that you have within yourself away from you. It's just within you. And, you know, and that's something I think that we often don't reflect upon enough, is that, imagine if we just looked backwards and looked at, before we got into, say, medical school, that was a big feat. That was just enough, you know, or we just did a, you know, like for me, it was such a big deal to do this extra research, which is about train the trainer in rural Sri Lanka. And I ended up doing a PhD just to finish that would be enough for me. And then later, just to finish the fellowship, because I found these things so hard. But if you look back, you always feel like you're a success for just, you know, just being able to do this. Whereas I find in competitive fields like academia and medicine, there's always people, you're just looking ahead of you often, and you've been told, look at someone else who's 10 steps ahead of you. And you, it always ends up in chronic dissatisfaction. So to me, I think satisfaction has to be found within at the beginning. And then you do these things because you want to, not because you feel you need to.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said. And you're right, it's that focus on the future, the focus on the next step, the next step. I fell into that trap as well. You know, oh, I'll graduate from medical school. Oh, I'll do internship. Oh, I'll do residency. And you kind of put off living your life. You put off enjoying your life because you're like, it'll get better next year or next year. And then next thing you know, it's been 10 years not really actually living the life, your life, how you want to live and being who you really are. And it's so true. We are enough for who we are, not about the accolades or the titles or whatever we can kind of collect.
So true. And I think it's wonderful to listen to your podcast, you know, Balanced Medics, because the people, and these amazing speakers, you know, yourself included, you know, they are reflecting back this wisdom that we are enough. And also, it's something that is not talked about, but when you hear it, it rings true. You know that. It's like we're all climbing mountains, and we don't stop and enjoy the view unless you consciously want to. And I think it's really important to, like, if you ever go and walk, just stop, enjoy the view. Even though when I'm surfing, it's not about catching waves. It's just like, you know, stop, be there, notice. And when you do that, that's when you see crazy stuff. Like, you'll see a dolphin jump out, or you'll see a sunrise, or you'll just notice that someone else is in the water next to you and you might just smile. And the beauty of the moment is there every single day. When I go to work, I always make sure that I smile at someone, say hello. And so that's for me. That's just so I enjoy what I'm doing. And I found it harder when I was training, because I felt like I was just being beaten, you know. If you're doing that, you're looked at as some kind of waster, you know. And that's why it was such a powerful thing to actually take that time off. And, you know, and actually, in the end, doing this respectable research, yet I was doing all these other things. You just talked to my PhD supervisors. They were like, what are you doing? You know, like, we were all having fun because it was really hard. There was a war going on, you know, in the latter heart of it. And, you know, it was pretty hard yakka, but it was fun. We just did not. I wouldn't have done it if I wasn't having fun. And I thought when I came back to Australia, that was the hardest. It was, you know, because I went back from Sri Lanka to New Zealand. And then I tried to write up a PhD in 6 months. And then I went to Australia for my first, you know, job. And that was in Sydney. And I found it very hard. The reverse culture shock was like, everyone's priority is so different. And I didn't know how to fit into that. But then I've always found it a bit tricky, you know, fitting into medical culture. But I've always had a lot of friends outside medicine, which has been, you know, one of the things. But, you know, the weirdest thing is I am both fringe within medicine but mainstream, because I was the class rep every year at a medical school, and I was a class president as well. So people who were fringe, I could walk with them too, and they said, "Bish," you know, I used to try and get them to come to parties, and they say, I don't like medical kind of functions, they're just not my scene. I said, really, why not? Come on, you know. And it was weird, but it was years later I realized, you know, part of it was all this pressure and all this competition that, you know, can be quite toxic. And I realized that a lot of people will avoid that, which is a shame, because the people who are not part of that will add so much to that community. And so for me, I'm like a border collie. I always like to get everyone together. And so I always did that in my medical class. And, like, you know, I just found it interesting that I am, if someone like me, who was so into, like I said, every part of medicine and was so well-resourced. You know, my dad was like one of the longest serving physicians in our sort of, you know, medium-sized hospital. And I got a brother as a doctor. If someone like me could struggle, you know, in medicine and burn out, I ended up actually having burnout where I needed to have 3 months off. I just thought, heaven help the people who are less resourced than me. And that's why, you know, one of the reasons, there's a bunch of reasons why I do this work.
That's so important. And thank you for sharing that and being vulnerable in that way, because no one is immune to burnout. And you're right. If you don't have that support network and those resources, it does make it just even harder. And it's not an easy job, and burnout's at an all-time high, unfortunately.
It is.
It's great what you're doing.
Well, one thing I want to say is that whilst it's an all-time high, there is these forces that are actually, you know, like you mentioned, you know, you've done a podcast with Cheryl. We've got a, you know, Wellbeing Network executive, and there's some great research and support networks that are coming out that are trying to change culture. I couldn't get access to Champions at the time. I was, you know, in my early registrar years when I probably needed it the most. But every now and again, I did have a few mentors and who really helped. And I think, you know, the stuff that's coming out there is, you know, there's that guy called Tate Schoenfeld. If you ever Google any of his articles, he's from San Francisco, Stanford, you know. And one of the things in a recent talk I heard him talk about is, if you spend 25% of your work doing stuff you love, then that is protective. And, you know, that could be just even making sure, like for me, when I do an emergency shift, it's pretty grueling, but I always, you know, will stay a little bit later at the end, just in the tea room, just have a chat, just a random, you know, talk about random stuff with someone, get to know someone a little bit better. There's always someone in there. And to me, that's what fills my cup, you know, and I make sure that every shift, and even if I can, or every period, maybe, you know, a week period or over months, that I'm trying to do stuff that, you know, you couldn't pay me not to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's so important, to do what energizes you, what does fill your cup.
What energizes
you. Yeah. Now, I feel like we need a part two, because I haven't got to like most of the questions that I wanted to ask, but I wanted to ask this of you.
Sure.
Because from what you were saying about, you know, finding the right fit, feeling maybe a bit like a fringe, feeling like you're not really fitting in with certain groups. I'm sure some of the listeners might feel like that in medicine. It can be, some specialties can be more conservative than others. What would you say to a junior doctor who's looking at their options and not really knowing what is the right fit for them at the moment?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say, you know, trust in yourself. I think it's really important to trust in yourself. The answers are really all within you. And, you know, I think that it's okay. It's okay not to know, you know. It's one of the, you know, you think that, oh, I wish I could be one of those people who just know. But in actual fact, it's very difficult. The key things for me is to look at two things in particular. What does it look like on the end of it? Talk to people. I used to ask people all the time. I used to talk to the bosses and say, hey, this looks pretty cool, but what is it like? And it's so interesting. Everyone who is in, say, a consultant level, they love being asked, what is it like? From medical students, even junior doctors, it just stops them in the track, because often they haven't actually asked themselves that, but the truth comes out. And I remember one orthopedic surgeon when I was an intern, and, you know, I asked him, and he just said, it's not a lifestyle choice. And what he was, orthopedic surgery. And you know, it looked like it, you know, from the outset. But for him, I guess he was in that phase where he was feeling, you know, being a junior consultant, and it was pretty hard work. That's one of the things that actually put me off orthopedics, in a sense, was I'd see these people, they do these fellowships and they come back and they just look so tired. But then 10 years later, they recoup it, you know, it's okay. But I think ask people. I used to ask, and not just one or two, ask people, what is it like? But then also ask the trainees and just observe. Because if it looks really grueling, that, like, I looked at the mid-ridges and, you know, at my time, and I was like, no way. I wasn't interested in medicine, but there's no way that I would ever want to do it. They just look so miserable. I did a mid-ridge term as well, and I have full respect for people who do medicine, you know, including my father, who is a physician. He loves it. You can ask, he's a rheumatologist physician, and if you ask him about rheumatology, he'll go on forever. And I think, you know, there is that element of, if you get beyond a certain point, you know, there's an investment, but you've got to figure out what the investment is. I think a lot of people do ask me this question, and, you know, what, you know, I'm not sure. And they're trying to figure out, they want to do certain things, but they're not sure if they want to, you know, put that much work into it. But whatever you do in life, it is hard work. So what I reckon is to create a path, and the best way is coaching. Like I honestly think, if you just spend a little bit of a time with a coach, I use coaching to get through. I have a coach. We have a great relationship, and I still have that relationship today. And you know, she helped me bring the best out of myself, and I navigated why I wanted to finish my research, which was destroying me, trying to write up a PhD thesis and do emergency training, which nobody understood. The beautiful thing is, talk to people who have the time to listen to you, and you can be a sounding board or write. I loved journaling. So if you write things down, you and I can look back at stuff I've written, you know, years later, it's amazing. So you have those answers within yourself. Ask people a lot and know that it's okay. It's actually okay. It's okay to not train. It's, you know, it's okay to actually, you know, start training and then pull out. You know, I'm a perfect example of that. I'm, you know, pretty happy professionally. It's okay to try and put your best in it and not get there, get knocked back. You know, it doesn't actually, you know, one of the things I learned, which was the second biggest kind of knockback I had, perhaps, which is probably the most intense, was the first exam failure, which is I failed my written for emergency. And, you know, I was 41 at the time, so I never failed an exam. And, you know, I it was such a big blow, trying hard to get it. And I think I remember this phrase from a friend who was also trying to sit his anesthetic exams, and he'd failed. And he said, "There's a Zig Ziglar quote that failure is an event, not a person." And I think I tell that to people who are failing their OSCEs and, you know, all these things. It really isn't. It's an opportunity to learn and grow. And I think, as I said before, we need to embrace that journey, which is about the highs and the lows, the failures. They're actually the greatest growth, and that's what I would say. So don't be afraid. Talk to people, and you know, you can always try things, and you can mitigate risk. You can pull out. You know, you can do things. You can walk away. You can come back to it. You know, a lot of people, when I was taking time out, I spent a lot of time, you know, mentoring people behind the scenes. I guess they'd always come to me because I wrote a blog post in Life in the Fast Lane, which is quite a popular emergency blog about the scenic route to emergency medicine. You can always Google that and you can see that story. And part of the reason I did that, and I did that after coming back from 4 years in the field in Sri Lanka and trying to write up a thesis, and I didn't know that the next 4 years were going to be so arduous, like literally. But I wanted to record it even if I never made it. I just wanted to record that this is what I have done. And this is okay. And the irony was that the college actually were looking at doing trainee profiles, and they asked me to write something for them. So they did that. But then I already had it written. So I think my friend was organizing that blog, and he asked me, I was trying to do a segment on international work for the, I used to write for Life in the Fast Lane back then for a little bit. And he suggested I write that article for them. And I did that, even knowing that I may not actually finish my fellowship, and that was okay.
That's so great. Thank you for sharing. And I really love your piece on about failure being an event, not a person, because I think, well, maybe not everyone, I don't want to generalize, but a lot of doctors probably haven't experienced much failure in that sense in their life, like failing exams or having setbacks. A lot of people, you know, go from high school to medical school to internship, and the big failures that they might experience are exams, training programs, and it's quite difficult. And also medical errors that can be very devastating. So it's really great that you shared that, because I think not taking it as you as a person are a failure is huge to recover from those things and take it as learning and part of the journey.
You're welcome. And actually, you know, just to say a comment about what you just said about maybe many people haven't experienced that. I think every single one of us does, because, you know, I think even if you haven't had an exam failure, what I find is the people who haven't experienced that are always experiencing the fear of failure. So this is one of the things that was a light bulb moment to me. I remember I was a senior reg, and there was a junior reg, and we were going to a Christmas party. So this is going years back. And and she was really one of the best, you know, junior regs I'd seen. Like, you know, put me to shame, and I often feel like, wow, you know, like she was so fast and good, and you know, and then you know, when I was talking to her in the car over the way to the restaurant, she would just say, I'm terrified of making a mistake. I've never made one. And that's when I realized, wow, yeah, I've made clinical errors. And, you know, one of the things I like to teach is talk about actually coping with error, you know, and also largely because a lot of it is about avoiding error, but a lot of the training, which is really important for well-being, is how do we handle that within ourselves, our colleagues, our teams. And I realized that even people who haven't had that experience of failing an exam or, you know, having clinical poor outcomes, they will still have that fear of failure. So it's actually important for everyone. And what's not done that well is the conversation around it, I think, and the relationship with it, you know, even being talked about. Because, and it's not modeled that well from seniors, because a lot of the seniors have probably would rather talk about success and how do you, you know, make sure that you do great clinical care, which is a good thing too. But I think it's such an important topic.
It is. It's a very important topic. I'm really passionate about talking about it because, like you said, it's not often spoken about. And I do think it is a matter of when those things happen, not a if, because you can have that big fear over your head, but we're all human. Things happen. Even when you do everything right, not everything goes how you'd like it to go. So it's something that we should be
teaching. That's medicine, yeah. Isn't it?
It's not a perfect science. No. We have to teach it early, I think, from medical school, kind of starting those conversations and getting you ready. So it's been really great to chat. I think we should have a part two for real.
Sure.
I wanted to ask you this question that I ask everyone else. What is balance to you?
Yeah, balance. I think it's, well, to me, balance is about prioritizing self-care. I think balance in the context of medicine is very, very difficult to achieve because there are so many forces in favor of work and putting your energy into like delivering clinical care, your team, your like outside projects within medicine. It's all consuming. You could have two lifetimes and worth of the things you need to do, put exams in there. And so for me, balance is about having a safety net and having a practice where you prioritize self-care first. So for me, you know, those are simple things like, you know, I always like to have morning time. I'm lucky with a career like emergency medicine. The downside is you work these unsociable, say, evening shifts. Now I don't have to do night shifts as a consultant for the last 4 years. But, you know, there's the evening shifts. They're pretty arduous, but at least I have my morning off. So for me, I like to at least get a few times a week where I can have a surf. I can, you know, have a coffee. Also, it's about doing the things that fill your cup. So for me, it's quality time with my partner, my kids, and, you know, doing some of my kind of artistic passions, like playing music, you know, dance if I get the chance, not these days anymore, but, but, you know, just doing the things that really, and prioritizing that, because I think if you don't stop and say, I just need to do these things now, and there's this phrase that was told to me, you know, once when I was in the field in Sri Lanka and I was really again hitting the wall a bit, was that sometimes you need a holiday when you least think you can afford it. And I think the same goes for a break. Sometimes you need a break when you really feel like you can't. And I think it's important once you get good at that, you actually start proactively planning those things in. So I think that's the closest I can get. It's an evolving field. It's not a static thing. So we're all trying to find balance all the time. And I think the people who are more sustainable, you know, and that to me is like, you know, success. If you can be sustainable, then you need to have worked out a way to prioritize self-care and not feel bad about it. Feel good about it.
Yeah, definitely. Not have that kind of guilt around keeping time for yourself. And I think it's really great to share that thing of healing the healer and not sacrificing yourself for the sake of whatever it may be, because I think we can help people and also help ourselves.
Yeah, And if you're junior, get a mentor so you can talk to that stuff, talk to people about that stuff, people you can share that back. Yeah.
I would really love to see that grow as a culture in medicine, people having mentors that they can chat to and keep throughout their training. I think that would be huge.
Well, I think you're doing this with things like this podcast, because I think people can listen to people and they feel like they're heard. They can feel that there's other people out there who think this way. And I think it's just so supportive. So when I, you know, give a talk about this stuff, often I'm quite vulnerable about my own journey. But I often take a quote from, I don't know if you heard of Jeff Toogood. He's a cardiologist who talks about, you know, mental health struggles and, you know, the normality of this and destigmatizing this. And he says that, you know, sometimes you talk to a group of people, and if there's one person in that audience who has shifted or has felt heard or felt better, well, you know, that's a success. And I think with mediums like this, if there's one person who feels like, yeah, look, that's great, you know, I think, you know, something good has happened.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's really powerful, even one person. I think sometimes with social media, you can sometimes forget the power of even one person connecting to things. So I really appreciate everyone that does tune in. I appreciate you being here. Is there anything else you'd like to add that you think would benefit the listeners?
I think, well, look, I did warn you at the beginning that I talk a lot, and but I would like to end, if I could, on a poem, because one of the things that I think one of the things I would like to add is that you should follow your passion. In fact, I pulled this, actually, someone told me this in a conference just recently. She was a diving medicine specialist. You might want to get her on your show as well. And she's an emergency physician. She said, look, I just do something that I really, it's, you know, for her, she does open mic night. She's an emergency physician, diving specialist, whatever, diving medicine. And for me, writing is a real passion, and poetry. And I just think if you could just be true to those things, that's great. So I've got a little poem, if you will, that I just pulled out of nowhere. For this is from about 13 years ago, and it's titled "To Be Authentic." To be one's authentic self is my quest. I will do this without any rest, because it is not about being best, but rather, it's my own test to see if I can realize the truth without any struth, because life is simple. And it can be as clear as a pimple, or even a beautiful dimple on the smiling face of life. Just do your best. Be true to yourself and understand love. With that, you'll have risen above and fly like a dove. In fact, you'll fit the eternal way. Just do it now, and you do not need to fray. Don't be afraid. Don't scare yourself into denial, because life is your trial, and it's one that you're going to pass.
Thank you. Did you write that 13 years ago?
Yes, actually I did. I wrote that 13 years ago, and it's so interesting, and it doesn't matter, but you know, I guess the context was dating but you know, being authentic, and that's probably before I met my partner, I think. Yeah, it was just around that time. And I guess, you know what, these are the universal things, is facing fear, being authentic. And that's what I do when I turn up to shift. I thought, all I can do is be the best version of myself. That is all I have the capacity to do. I can study more, I can learn more, and I will if I need to, and you know, when I do that. But you can only just do your best, and that should be good enough for you. Get yourself some friends and mentors and people who will reflect that back to you. Because it's so important. We've only got this one life, that I know about, at least. And whilst we're here, we might as well be happy. So I really wish, you know, your listeners the best to find that the best happiness they can, within or outside medicine.
That's beautiful, and that's right. It can be in, outside. You can jump out, come back, like you're saying. Thank you for sharing that. And can people reach out to you? How can they find you if they'd like to ask you questions or read more about your blog?
Yeah, sure. Look, I can send some links. I mean, I haven't written the blog as much as I used to, you know, but it's a lot of resource there for when I was a registrar. I've got a blog, I've got a YouTube channel. I think I've got some stuff on Instagram, Those are the probably Instagram messages, probably. I think that you can write messages. That's how I got in touch with you, right? So so I think Instagram, I don't run any sort of regular thing at the moment. It's just life is busy with a young family, but definitely happy to do that or get some email. Just be warned that I'm pretty bad at responding for those things. So if you really want to, LinkedIn is the other one. LinkedIn, I'm on LinkedIn.
I'll put all that in the show notes, as well as the Life in the Fast Lane blog that you wrote, just summarizing your story and the scenic route to becoming a staff specialist in emergency medicine. Thank you again for coming on. It's been a pleasure to talk.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure for me too. Thanks so much, Isabella.
You've been listening to the Balance Medics Handover podcast. If you've enjoyed what you've heard, I'd love for you to take a minute to rate and review this podcast and click the follow button. For more resources, check out the Balance Medics website. The link to this will be in the show notes below. See you next episode.